hour of Cairo Nights. Mason Mike here with you. We're going to play some audio here in this upcoming segment, and there's a few uses of some racially sensitive language. It is in context, but we did not edit it. And so I just want folks to know, in case they are extra sensitive to that type of thing, that that's going to be happening here in probably about 5 or 10 minutes. Stace, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Doing okay? It's a heavy day.
It's been heavy.
Yeah, it's been a heavy couple days. And something happened on Danny and Gallant this morning where Ray Roberts, he was a former NFL player. He does Seahawks pre-game and post-game analysis, and he was on Danny and Gallant this morning and shared his thoughts. He had a lot to say about what's going on right now, and I just thought it was eloquent and beautiful, and we need to hear this kind of thing. He sort of leads into it saying that this is, you know, this is his truth. Agree, disagree, or agree to disagree. He doesn't really care. His truth doesn't represent the truth of all African-Americans, but it was influenced by similar and often the same life experiences that they all share. And so here is what Ray Roberts had to say on Danny and Gallant this morning on 710 ESPN.
I would like to take this time to paint a picture that I hope will replace the images of the last few days and lead to a level of understanding, sympathy, and empathy, and actionable, measurable change. I do not have all the answers, and this is not intended to help you figure out what to do. That's your work. In 1619, the first Africans were kidnapped and brought to this country. They landed on the shores of Virginia, a place called Point Comfort, of all places, and were auctioned off and sold into slavery. From that moment, the blood that ran through the veins of this country did not run for us. The heartbeat of this country did not beat for us. We were never intended to share in its success or live freely within its borders. Think about that. Then consider this. Enoch Waters, who graduated from Hampton University in 1933 and worked for the Chicago Defender, the nation's largest black daily newspaper, and became the editor of the Associated Negro Press, wrote a piece entitled, The Only American. It reads, "The black man is the only American who came here not seeking freedom because he had been robbed of it, not looking for a home because he had been snatched from his, not as a fugitive from persecution because it awaited him, not in search of opportunity because it was beyond his reach, not in pursuit of happiness because he had left it behind, not hoping for love because there was none for him, and not willingly because he came as a slave in chains." Think about that. Paint that picture in your mind and sit with it. Also sit with this. There were multiple generations of black people born in this country that never experienced freedom. I'll say it again. There were multiple generations of black people born in this country that never experienced freedom. Fast forward to the life and times of my grandfather, Warren Henry Roberts. He served and fought for this country. He fought for freedoms and rights that he did not have access to in this country. When he returned home, he was still called nigger. He could not eat in the same restaurants or drink from the same water fountains as his fellow white soldiers. He could not sit in the same classrooms or live in the same neighborhoods. The back door was still the expected entrance to most establishments. He did not have the same access to health care, education, jobs, or housing that the white soldiers had. He could be beaten and even murdered for just looking at a white woman. And many of the perpetrators of these actions were white dudes he fought alongside of. So when I think about Kaepernick kneeling and all the shouts of he's disrespecting the flag, the military in this country, my blood boils. Our sacrifice for this country is unmatched. and it's not even close. Now, fast forward to the life and times of my father, Richard Ray Roberts Sr., and my uncles. And in this moment, I don't want to forget all the black women who suffer the most when black men are snatched for their lives and they're not fathers and they're not providers and they're not husbands and they're not someone to love on. They were denied opportunities, tormented, and had to face and endure blatant racism and hate, and had to bite, scratch, and claw for limited resources, essential jobs. It saddens me to know that my dad's best self was diminished and limited because of systems, mindsets, and people who do not value him as a man or as a human. Then I think of my life, the things I've seen. As a kid, I witnessed Klan marches in my town. The summer before ninth grade, while on a bike ride with my cousin, I was chased by a group of white dudes. I crashed and broke my wrist. I missed the beginning of the football season because of it. And I cannot count the number of times I've been called a nigger. My mother was told by my elementary school principal that I should attend a college that focused on football because I would never graduate from the University of Virginia. To feel like I wasn't even completely welcomed at the University of Virginia. Even as a player in the NFL, while a member of the Detroit Lions, I was pulled over and asked to explain how I could afford such a nice car or what work did I do to afford it. I was also stopped driving through my own neighborhood and asked why was I there. I was stopped in Redmond, Washington, just a little ways from my home, and asked if I was lost. Then I think of more recent things, like athletes been told to stick to sports, or players been called sons of bitches by the president, to African-American men being murdered by those who are sworn to protect. When it comes to people of color and protests or pushback in this country, it more times than not is met with force and aggression. While whites toting guns, assault rifles, and who knows what else, are free to move about and within a state capitol building, screaming in the faces of law enforcement and taunting them. Then I think to white mass shooters being apprehended alive and even taken to Burger King or even given water to be made comfortable. And I see black men, dying while selling cigarettes and CDs, while being stopped for a traffic violation, been killed while in cuffs, and like Mr. Floyd, begging to breathe and shouting out for the comfort and safety of his already deceased mother. I can't help but have images of slaves being beaten and hung to death, begging and shouting out for the comfort and safety of their motherland. I could go on and on. I believe and feel that what we are seeing and witnessing in this moment is an uncovering or exposing of a wound that was never meant to be tended to nor healed. We were expected to lay down, obey, fall in line, or bleed out. And honestly, guys, there is financial gain for some to keep it that way. CNN, Fox, other sports outlets, other media outlets and platforms all feed the beast. They lack cultural and racial representation, cultural awareness and competence, and engage in divisive language, opinions, and programming because it drives listenership, and that fills bank accounts. It's like a competition or a sport in and of itself. Who can be the most outrageous, the most controversial, the most divisive? It has become a game to gain the most listeners so that they can pat themselves on the back, feel good about their ratings, and put money in their pockets. And although I appreciate the opportunity to speak freely on this station, Bonneville is just as guilty. So to close, this is bigger than George Floyd or Trayvon Martin or Ferguson or Martin Luther King Jr. or Malcolm X. This is about a historical mindset and system that was never, never intended to benefit us, and we were never expected to defeat it or overcome it. And to those of you who are participating in the riots, know that there are those who see this as an opportunity to destroy, rob, and steal. Know that there are those covertly involved to instigate, so that the peaceful protesters can take the blame. Know that destruction and violence is how the other side expects and wants you to respond, so that they can use these actions to distract themselves from the real issues and use as an excuse not to hear us. Know that if they can't hear us, they cannot be challenged to defeat their own biases, isms, flawed mindsets, perspectives, and actions. And if they can't do that, they can't have their hearts changed. And if they can't do that, then policies and laws do not change. And if that happens, the future is bleak, and we continue to lose, and injustice continues to prevail. And to those on the other side, you know the game that's being played. You know what the issues are, and you're choosing to be distracted. By doing so, you protect your level of comfort, and your comfort will be the reason our country will never be its best self. Choose to engage the discomfort of putting in the work. Challenge and defeat yourselves. It is an individual and personal journey. Then use your privilege, access, resources, influence, knowledge, and power to help make a difference and deliver change. This is really hard, Danny.
Yeah.
It really is, bro.
Yeah.
Like, with all the success I've had, and I don't read that for people to feel sorry for me or to be a victim or anything, because I overcame all of that. But I still, at night, worry about my son getting home. And that was before, even before this. I still worry that my son gets home safely, that he doesn't get pulled over. My son is 6'8" and 300 pounds, and drives a big car with big wheels and tinted windows and loud music, and he lives in Woodinville. So it would be really easy for a movement of his to be misunderstood and him not make it. So that's the type of stuff that people live with daily. Not just in these moments, but it's daily. Every day people live like this. It's a burden that they carry. It's a fear. It's an anxiety. Even thinking about social distancing and wearing masks, I have to think about every single time I go in the grocery store, I put the mask on, and I make sure that I'm friendly and I speak to every single person I come by, because I don't want anybody to misinterpret my body language or anything as something other than just trying to find food.
Powerful. It was Ray Roberts, former NFL player. He does pregame and postgame for the Seahawks. I'm really grateful that he did that, that he said what he said. But I'm starting to hear this sentiment, and it's new to me. I didn't realize this before, that they're tired. They're tired of having to explain all of this stuff. And I think about with that thing he said about going to the grocery store. I think about my baseline stress level during this pandemic and what an effect that's had, right?
Right.
What's my baseline stress now versus 6 months ago? It's very, very different. And for tons and tons of people of color in this country, that's their baseline all the time. And it's something that could be completely avoidable, but it's because of the systems that we have in place and the way that they are seen and treated that they have to live like that every day, and I just can't imagine it.
Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, when he's talking about, I don't know of any African-American friends of mine, I don't know any who haven't had that same been pulled over,
yep.
been stopped.
Not
a buddy
one.
Of mine got stopped, thrown down, and said he looked like a robber in the neighborhood. He was walking back from a Blockbuster carrying a Blockbuster box.
Mm.
Like, it was not. And then ultimately, and that was the law enforcement back in California where I was living at the time. And it's not that everyone or many people haven't experienced sort of, you know, maybe getting bugged by law enforcement at some point mistakenly and sometimes justifiably. But let's just say mistakenly. It is the worry that when that happens, that it's going to be misinterpreted and escalate suddenly. And that
right.
is why these intersections are important. It's not that someone is crushed by getting pulled over mistakenly. It's that when you get into the crucible there,
right.
every little thing can escalate very, very rapidly and in very bad ways. And this is what he's talking about when he says he worries about his son. A friend of mine has said the exact same thing. He said every single day. It's like you should be celebrating when they're teenagers and becoming young adults. But when they move outside of this cocoon you've tried to build, you're terrified all the time about it. And that's exactly what he's talking about. I think this is singularly the most important thing that I've heard about this in recent memory.
Yeah.
It really is that well stated and that powerful.
Yeah. I think it's the important thing, too, to, like, if you are a white listener and you care about this, which I hope that you do, to find a way. I don't always have the right words to say. More often than not, I can't think of what to say, and I'm at a loss for words, and that's okay, too. You don't have to have the right thing or know exactly the right thing to do. I think it's important to listen, to, like, decenter yourself, and to not be defensive. I think that, like, whenever we talk about any issue, people hear it and they think, well, wait a minute, like, but what about me? And I get that. I'm not saying that white people are never arrested or that there's never anything happening, but you have to just be aware and educate yourself and know that statistically it happens at a much higher rate for Black Americans versus white Americans. And I mean, even now I'm like at a loss for words to try to say like you suffering isn't not important, but right now there's a group of Americans that are really, really struggling to get on equal footing. And you saying, but what about me, isn't helping it.
That's the all lives matter thing, right? It's like that'd be like criticizing someone who's trying to raise money for cancer research and saying, well, there are other diseases too. Like, yes, we understand that. But right now we're trying to focus on something that we think is really important. And just on what you said there, Stacey, something that's different for me this time around is just understanding that, like, listening is great and listening is a perfect first step, but that's not the end of it. That we can't put all the burden on the people who are suffering from this problem to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. That's what I have to say about that.
And it's not just speaking out. Donate, right? Like, if you're like, okay, I want to do something, I don't know what to do. Or if you're someone that's like, okay, like, I would do, like, a protest or march or go somewhere to support, but I'm a vulnerable population, there's already a pandemic. Like,
right.
if you want, you can donate. There's so many reputable places to send money for people specifically, Black Americans who are being affected by what's going on right now. And I really encourage you, if you want to do something, to find a way to take action too.
Yeah.
And I would also encourage people to not get caught up in the noise. Understand when you're looking at a situation that there's a lot of nuance.
Yeah.
And a lot of different things going on, even on the protests in Seattle. And to allow anyone to tell you it was X.
Right.
Solely, or
right.
It was Y solely, is a mistake. No different than if someone says all Black people are such, or all white people are such, or all Chinese people are such. These protests have a core in them that you need to pay attention to. And you can do that and sympathize and try to understand it while being angry about people who are breaking windows. That those are not two ideas you can't suspend in your head at the same time. And I would suggest that people do. And not just write off the whole thing, as some would like, as some Antifa left-wing chance to destroy property in America. This is not what the core issue is here. Did that happen? Without any question.
Right.
And also a bunch of white supremacists who went out and took advantage of it, too, in particular in California. But I would say that, remember, you can look at this situation and tease out what the core truth is without a whole lot of effort if you just listen.
Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate you being a part of this. We will be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. We are continuing our conversation with Stacey Joe that we had at the top of the hour. In case you missed it, go get the podcast, Cairo Nights. It shows up when after the show is over tonight. You really, really should hear it. It's some powerful stuff. But, Mike, do you want to tell us about Pop?
Yeah, Greg Popovich, if you haven't read this yet, Greg Popovich, who's the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, released a pretty scathing indictment of the president. Now, Greg Popovich is no stranger to commenting on politics and no stranger to criticizing Donald Trump, but this is probably the strongest statement I've seen from a professional sports coach regarding politics and the current situation in the United States ever.
Yeah.
And it says a lot about what his background is, essentially that this is a person so self-focused, so self-absorbed, that he can't see beyond the political victories gained by igniting his base in this sort of situation to actually try to come out. And even if he was just a complete cynical politician, even those folks will get out and do that unifying statement. But that he's beyond even making that unifying statement right now and this something like we need to be better as a country sort of statement,
yeah,
says a lot about what we get in this particular president. And it was, for me, Greg Popovich has been one of these people who actually is reflective of the people that he coaches and works with every day. I'm always shocked by NFL coaches who seem completely clueless. And we can go back through, I'm not going to go back through the whole Colin Kaepernick situation, mm-hmm. but given the people they work with day in and day out and having zero connection to their perspective on the world. I'm not saying they need to adopt their perspective. I'm saying they need to connect with that perspective in a very serious way. And you rarely see white NFL, white NBA, white MLB managers or coaches connect in the way that Greg Popovich seems to.
Yeah.
And for me, and he has also the respect of virtually every player in the league. For me, it is absolutely worth reading. If you do Greg Popovich, Donald Trump as a search term, you will find it immediately. And again, it's why he's one of the most impressive people in all of basketball.
Pop said that he was talking about the thing that strikes him is how we've seen all this before, right? And police violence, racism, protests, all that stuff, but that nothing ever changes. And that sort of frustration is really coming to a head here, that people are tired of having to say this over and over and over again. You see signs out that people are holding at protests, like older people who are like, I can't believe it's been 60 years and I'm still having to come out here and do this kind of thing. And he really uses his position to call out us, to call out white Americans and say that, you know, it's our privilege, it's our luxury that we can avoid this kind of stuff, that we can be apolitical, that we can decide that, well, we don't have to engage with this kind of thing because it's exhausting or it upsets our balance or it's uncomfortable or whatever it is. But we really need to change that we need to get involved, yeah, too.
Yeah, and I think the number of sports figures in general, whether it be coaches or authority figures like Greg Popovich or Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors in the NBA, mm-hmm. Or whether it be players, Bobby Wagner, Seattle Seahawk linebacker, had a press conference earlier today. Another Seattle Seahawk, Russell Wilson, released a statement. DK Metcalf, wide receiver, released a statement. And those are just local athletes. There are athletes across the country who have spoken out. And because of that, we've been talking about their statements. In addition to the incredibly powerful talk that Danny and Gallant had with Ray Roberts this morning, himself a former player, but a very active part of Seattle's sporting community. Like you said, does the Seahawks pre and post game show, part of the Bonneville family here.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, I mean, he called out within his own industry, you know, whether at Bonneville, whether it's in the community, moments where he felt like there wasn't enough being done.
Yeah.
To solve the problem. And I think that the overwhelming, I'm just talking about racism in sports now, the overwhelming majority of feedback that we got on our show earlier today, I don't know how it is with you guys because you're already on the news side, but normally we always get a stick to sports If we mention anything outside of sports, the overwhelming amount of people were talking about how powerful it was and how emotional it was to hear Ray's statement, in which he was just incredibly vulnerable and emotional himself. There were a small number of people, though, that had that same kind of stick to sports rhetoric.
Sure.
I think part of the problem with that is that too many people think that speaking out against racism is political, and it's not. Mm-hmm. I don't care what political party you support, you should not be okay with racism. The world is past this. We have decided to move past this. It's not gone. It's still very much here.
Yeah.
But like, you shouldn't be hanging on to that. You should ditch that one. Leave it behind. And I think that in the statements that I have heard, how I'm interpreting it as a white American, as a white woman, is that the statements of Black Americans are powerful and should be heard, but shouldn't be the only statements speaking out against racism.
Right.
That it is very important that white Americans also speak up about it, which is why it's so important that Greg Popovich speak out, that Steve Kerr speak out. You guys talk on your show about it. You have an incredibly large platform, and it is important, I think, sometimes for people, specifically white people, to hear other white people talking about it. Because as a white person, talking about race makes me uncomfortable sometimes, not because I don't abhor racism, but because I'm not always aware of my own race. I am privileged enough to not have to be. And so talking about it makes me aware of the ways in which I have an upper hand in a society where I'm given the benefit of the doubt. And that's uncomfortable because I and most people don't want to think you're a bad person. You don't want to think that you're contributing to a problem. So it's uncomfortable to talk about race. You're not used to doing it. But when you tell a Black athlete to stop, a Black athlete can't separate himself from his Blackness the way that you might be able to do that. And you shouldn't do that. And I think that race and speaking out against hate and racism is so inherently a part of sports, and it has been culturally for a long time. One of the most outspoken people, rights, Muhammad Ali. You know what I mean? There have been so many important sports figures that have been a part of it, and I think it's time for white voices to also join that conversation. And then, like, you take away from other white people that are maybe fine with racism to think that there's a safe space to talk about it around you just because you're also white.
It's an odd, at times, really contradictory relationship that professional sports wants to have with with its own history of a variety of ways of interpreting race and racism. And when they have, when Major League Baseball, you know, has everybody wear 42 to celebrate Jackie Robinson, which Major League Baseball has done, the first African-American player in Major League history, they're saying two things. They're saying there was a history prior and that there is a history past. And I think sometimes they want to celebrate these things without owning the full plate.
Right.
They want that one thing to say, look, we broke that barrier, let's move on.
Right.
And the fact is, that we haven't moved on. We've moved on in some ways. Anyone who suggests that it's the same now as it was in 1942 is mistaken. Anyone who suggests that because it's different now than it was in 1942, thereby it's fixed, is also mistaken.
Right.
And I think that these conversations are not only incredibly important, I think there's one thing you can do if you are a white American talking about race, and you should, in the United States. You should use that opportunity in certain cases to say, I don't know.
We'll be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike. It's the end of a Monday evening. It's time to close out the show, frankly, the only way we know how. That's by telling you what's on our mind. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. If you want to tell us what's on yours, that is always an option for you. Frank's here. DB's here. Mike Lewis, of course, goes without saying. I'm Aaron Mason. Hello. Figured, you know, in case you're tuning in for Coast to Coast and you don't know who are these guys, that's who we are. Tonight, I wanted to talk to Frank, sort of everyone cede our time to Mr. Shires, because we've been thinking about you, man, and we're glad that you're okay. You were involved in a little bit of an altercation when you were covering some protest activity in Bellevue this weekend. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. It was yesterday, so it was Sunday afternoon. I went. I was going to come in. They called me into the station, and I told them that I would go to Bellevue since it's close to home and you know, take some video and get some pictures. And so I happened to show up while I think the peaceful protest in Bellevue was still going on south of Bellevue Square. I was at the north end of the mall, and that's where the looting was happening. Hmm. And I witnessed just crowds of people pouring into the side of Bell Square. And they were running in, going into Macy's or whatever, Nordstrom, and then coming out with armloads of stuff. Never seen anything like that. Yeah. And certainly not in Bellevue, where I live. And while I was watching and taking pictures and doing my job, I was, you know, I guess I should have had my, you know, what do they say? Have your head on a swivel. And I didn't. And so a person reached up behind me, grabbed the cell phone, pulled it out of my hands and me to the ground, and a guy kind of shoved or kicked me and took off with the cell phone. And I followed him for three or four blocks and finally did actually face off with him politely, believe it or not. I wasn't angry. I was just more upset and just said, dude, please just give me back the phone. It's company phone. And he started yelling that I was wrongly accusing him of stealing my phone. And, you know, I was getting cat calls from other cars, and then he took off around the building and was gone. It's not like I could lose him because he was wearing a yellow, swear to God, a yellow hoodie with cheetah spots.
Really?
So you could pick him out of a crowd. Most people were wearing all black.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Not this cat.
Huh.
He was pretty identifiable. So, you know, Mike is more familiar with this kind of thing. This is the first time I've been involved in anything where I've watched, you know, a little violent stuff happened. I've never been in a situation where anybody would touch me as a member of the press. And I had the shirt on. I had the press pass.
I was going to say you were clearly identified
as
press.
Yeah, and that
press
did not make me happy at all. I was shocked that that would happen. But I assume, Mike, you've been in some of the more torturous things, and that was a wrong assumption on my part.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a wrong assumption on anyone's part at any point. Those crowds do not necessarily obey what we would call the unwritten rules, standard decorum. I mean, they go off at times. And so you've got to kind of keep your back a little bit protected. And you've got to keep your eyes not just... There's a term that photographers use called lost in the lens. And you're so focused on the picture.
Which is exactly what I was doing.
You forget the world around you. Mm. And that's how they get everything from getting hit on the sidelines on a football game to having something bad happen to you in a crowd situation like this. It's very difficult to do both, which is why I pick my spots extremely carefully since I've done a lot of this stuff. But even then, you're not immune. I mean, it's some of it is just the luck of the draw. And, you know, and you drew a bad card that day. And I'm sorry, because it really does. It makes it it's terrible because you weren't there to you know, do anything other than provide some news coverage for a station that is trying to be, you know, I think exceedingly fair and balanced in what it is doing to explain this situation from a variety of points of view, but also just the straight news, which is, you know, the only point of view we can provide. And so, you know, I think it's supremely a drag, but I also would say that if you haven't been in that situation, well, now you got your lesson.
Oh, and, man, what a way to learn.
I know. Right?
And you know, next time, hopefully you won't feel like, because at the end, you lost a phone that the company paid for, and it's lousy. But it's people had a lot more at risk and a lot worse things happen. And I'm not saying that that means you shouldn't be bothered. I'm merely saying that you were doing it in service of something that's big, that's pretty important.
I was most frustrated by the fact, thank you for that, that I had good pictures, right, of like the Bartels with the cash, the front windows kicked out and the cash boxes on the floor. I had some pictures and video of people looting, and I was going to come straight back to the station and email those to mynorthwest.com so we could put them up on the site for people to see what was going on, right?
Yeah.
And I was so sad that that was just taken.
Yeah.
I guess. And that maybe that's silly of me. And the other thing that struck me was these were not people from Bellevue.
And well organized, he said.
Oh, boy. Talking on cell phones, knowing where the cops were. Where the cops were, they weren't.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then when the cops showed up, cool.
Wow.
It was, yeah, it was a mind-blowing experience.
Well, we're glad you're okay.
Thank you.
That's the most important thing.
I am very blessed. Everybody that I've here since last night and today have been nothing but beautiful.
Good. Good.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for us, everybody. For Mike Lewis, Frank Shires, DB, I'm Aaron Mason. Thanks so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.